Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, Brian Hayes, CEO of the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland, is here with me in the studio. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Claire.
You're publishing this report this morning which recommends a credit guarantee scheme for small builders. So what's the problem that you think needs solving?
Well, I think that the essential issue is that we all face, how do we get output up in terms of the total number of new housing units? If you look at last year's total envelope of public and private finance that went into development in this area, it was about 13 or 13 and a half billion, about 8 billion on the private side and about 5 billion on the public side. That created about 30,000 new units. If we're going to get to 50,000, which seems to be the kind of landing zone of a target.
50 to 60.
If you look at what the SRI and the Housing Commission have said, the kind of capital envelope to get to that number is about 20 billion on an annualized basis. So without finance, you can't do anything. And I think our essential argument on behalf of the banking sector is we could do more if we get the risk profile and the mix of public and private finance together right. And the suggestion on the credit guarantee scheme is not a new scheme. For instance, if you look at the COVID payment at the time, the banks and the government came together to work out a credit guarantee scheme of up to 90%. It was late on in COVID, but I think the advantage of that was we saw some of the mistakes that were made in other EU countries.
That was for small businesses
at the
time,
wasn't it? That was for small businesses. Now, what we're suggesting is how do we really ramp up output from those smaller builders? Because we, if you look at the development market at the moment, we have maybe two, three large-scale builders, PLC builders. If you look in the UK, they have up to 30. And the difference is, if you have larger builders, you have builders of scale, there's greater efficiencies, you can have a number of different developments on different sites that that big company is part of.
Easier for them to access finance. You're talking about the smaller builders.
Yeah, so exactly. So the smaller builders typically, if a smaller builder is going to a development for a bank at the moment, typically they're getting 65, 66% of the loan to a viable project. That means they've got to find 35% elsewhere. Some of that is through their own equity, and that's a good use of capital because in the past, in the Celtic Tiger era, you were getting maybe 80 or 90% and that was madness.
Or 100%.
And that was madness. So what we're saying is that, you know, good development, good capital allocation requires obviously the debt, but also a contribution from the developer, an equity. And then the problem for the smaller developer now is, in order to make the numbers work, they get what's called mezzanine finance, which is this other 10 or 15% then, which is typically high cost. So if the government were prepared to introduce a credit guarantee scheme for smaller builders, maybe 15% of, say, 90% guarantee, it could bridge the gap. And I think that would make a huge difference, for not only for those smaller developers to do a number of different things at the one time, but it would also help to change the profile of the risk.
Okay. Do we not have this already, though? Because I was looking back in 2019, the government set up an agency called Home Building Finance Ireland.
Yes.
Does that not do this job?
It's doing it at a level, some level, but it needs to do more. And I think we can do more together with, when we have a very good relationship with them and organisations like SBCI as well. But I think the question will be the ramp up as we go from 13 billion to 20 billion. Often banks feel that they're crowded out of public finance. So in other words, if the state is giving money to an approved housing body or indeed to the local authorities, it's exclusively public money. Sometimes a more efficient use of that, the other part of what we're saying today, would be for us not to be crowded out, to use some of the capital we have. And we think that's a way of spreading the risk in an environment where banks have to take a regulatory and supervisory review on risk assessment.
Because at the time when that agency was set up, the Minister for Finance at the time, Pascal Donoghue, said commercial lenders had shown little interest in lending money to smaller projects with lower potential returns.
I think, well, firstly, that was a different time. We're in a different interest rate environment now. Arguably, the amount of capital that's required now is higher because of risk. It is all primed on the basis of risk. The environment is different now. And I think, you know, I heard Seamus Coffey last week, and indeed the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council economist on your own show yesterday, make this point about output. The whole focus has to be on output. How do we get output improved? And yes, it's about more builders. Yes, it's about more efficiencies. yes, it's about recognising that, what is it, 50% of all new units are likely to be apartments on a go-forward basis, which is extremely costly for small builders, I hasten to add. It's all those things. But it's also about the mix of finance we all need to get to a better place. And we think we can do more. The other point I'd make is, like, sometimes I get a bit depressed listening to some of the conversations about cuckoo funds and vulture funds. You know, one simple message I'd like to, we need international capital in this country. It is critical towards improving housing output and demonising, you know, primary lenders or secondary lenders.
Well, people do have a problem with vulture funds coming up and buying entire estates. And the government recognises that as well because of this talk or suggestion that there should be double the rate of stamp duty for those organisations.
Without some of those funds building to the high spec that they have, we would have even worse problems across the economy because the people who are now renting out those properties or purchasing those properties would be in the rental market, therefore pushing up prices.
Yeah, but we need everyone. But Brian, on those high spec apartments, and you know mm-hmm. this, those vulture funds, as people
well,
call
some,
them.
Well, there are two differences. They call them, yeah. It's all around, but critically.
But you talk about the high spec, they're charging extremely high rents as well, which is squeezing people
out. And a certain
out.
Group of people can afford that, Claire. But the advantage from an Irish perspective is the risk is off balance sheet in terms of the state. The risk is external to the state. Without that particular developer coming in and investment firm prepared to do that, we would have an even worse situation.
But the balance isn't right. You know, you'll have people who can afford that. There are loads of people who can't.
The balance has to be obtained between a domestic finance, international finance, and a stable environment where we can all put our back into try to improving output.
So when you hear this suggestion that they should be charged double rate stamp duty, are you saying that shouldn't happen, that they shouldn't be a target of government in this next budget?
Well, there are particular issues around some of the purchasing of these homes, especially, and I know the government have changed the planning laws to try to deal with that and have seen stamp duty. My essential argument is you have to follow the science here and follow the evidence, and the evidence suggests that at 10%, it's probably the right thing at the moment. Governments have to keep that under review. But my essential argument is not so much about the bulk purchasing. My argument is about international capital. We need international capital. And sometimes the demonising of international capital in this country comes at a cost. And I think that's something we all need to be aware of.
OK. Now, are you saying, though, that the state should help these smaller developments keep their margins, retain the margins that they expect to get from building houses to sell privately?
I think
at high prices at the moment.
It's all predicated on having more labour to actually do this work and more builders who are prepared to take on and share the risk. I think we can get more output if typically a small builder at the moment, Claire, will be on one site. Typically they go to the bank, they get finance for maybe 20 units. When they sell 10, they come back to the bank for the next phase. That's also a good use of capital. We need more builders building on multiple sites. And I think if we can get the risk weighting right between public and private, the banks can do more. That's the essential argument we're making.
Now, Sinn Féin launched its housing policy earlier this month. It plans to deliver these reduced cost houses by building them on state-owned land. So the state would pay for all the land-related costs and they would retain ownership of the land as well. The state would. Now, when that element of the plan was criticised, Sinn Féin said that they had spoken to you in advance. Piers Doherty and Ona Brin had been in speaking to your organisation and your members. Did your organisation and members give them the green light for this plan and say that the banks would lend to people who buy homes on state land?
So we had a very good discussion with Sinn Féin, as we have with all political parties, be they in opposition or in government. It's no great surprise that people will want to get an industry view before they bring forward a policy. I think it was also said in your programme last week that at no stage was there a memorandum of understanding between the banks and Sinn Féin. Mm-hmm. There was a generalised discussion on a generalised proposal. And as they've said themselves in their own document, it would require further consultation.
But they said there was no objection.
So we put forward a number of views and issues around what they were suggesting. And we asked them to consider that, which presumably they are considering. They've said in their document that further consultation would be needed. Mm-hmm. So if Sinn Féin is in government at the next election, I suspect they want to bring this proposal forward. And at that stage, not just ourselves, but also legal professionals, valuers, and everyone in the conveyancing
can
view.
Can I ask you, what were the issues that were identified with the plan?
Well, at its most basic level, Claire, a bank's balance sheet has two bits to it. You know, the liabilities on one side and the assets on the other. And the assets are particularly mortgage assets, mortgage loans, are underwritten what we call by security. So the reason why your mortgage product is cheaper than your personal loan is because...
It's asset-backed.
One of the important things in conveyancing, and effectively when a bank gives Claire Byrne money to buy her house, that asset sits on the bank's balance sheet. It requires what's called good and marketable title from a legal professional.
But if the state owns the land...
Well, just let me finish the point. Yeah. So that's obviously something that a bank would need. And we did highlight that to Sinn Féin, and they accepted that. And we also highlighted the fact that under existing legislation, there's a right to purchase a leasehold. Mm-hmm. That might require a change in the legislation. But it, as in all schemes, and the government, frankly, have had schemes that we work with the government on, the first home schemes being one, the mortgage to rent scheme being another, the vacant property scheme. So
it's not this scheme that Sinn Féin has come up with. It's not impossible for you to work with it in the banking
sector.
It's
not up to us to say a yay or nay to a scheme because we haven't seen the full detail. But what I'm saying is this, if a new government comes in and they want to sit down with the banking industry and the Law Society and everyone else to discuss the scheme, we're happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding some of the issues that we've brought to their attention around security, because qualified security is an issue that would have to be worked out.
Okay, so it's not something that could be implemented on day one of a Sinn Féin government as it stands.
They've accepted this, in fairness to them, because they'd have to either bring forward a legislation or a scheme that would have a public consultation. We're just one stakeholder amongst others, and we would give our views at that stage. So there's other ways you could do this potentially. We suggested at the time that you could use local authority loans, for instance, because, and they refer to that in their paper, the banks might look at how we could help to fund something like this. But you know, we haven't seen a detailed proposal.
The banks mightn't be directly lending to the person who was ultimately going to live in that house, but lending to the local authority to set up a fund.
But it could potentially be to the government as a bond, and then it's a matter for the government to distribute mortgages through local authorities. There's a number of ways you could potentially do it. But I would make the point, ultimately, it's a matter for a new government to bring forward. Yeah. But that's the way these things work.
But the position now is you've had this conversation with Sinn Féin, you've raised some issues, you've told them about views within your industry, and they come back to you. Are you waiting for them to come back to you, or is the conversation over?
We gave feedback, and it's a matter for Sinn Féin to take their proposal.
Any concern amongst your members about Sinn Féin's plan to phase out the Help to Buy scheme, eventually planning to abolish it?
Well, listen, we're on the public record on the Help to Buy scheme. We have, you know, repeatedly said in pre-budget submissions that we support the Help to Buy scheme. We see it as an important vehicle for first-time buyers who are buying new homes. Probably, if you were starting from now, you wouldn't have a first home scheme. But we're not starting from now. And I think, you know, the overall point I'd make to the political system, as all these issues are debated out in public and politicians set their view, is that going back to that point I made about investment, whatever we do in the next few years to get that number up to 50,000, which we all accept is probably the number, we've got to take forward what is working and add into that schemes that have an impact. And I think, phasing out Help to Buy, we think would be detrimental ultimately in trying to bridge the gap for many first-time buyers.
But if Sinn Féin get to where they need to when it comes to supply and house prices, their argument is that you shouldn't need a scheme like that.
And maybe that's the point. If we got to 50,000 and we saw some stability in terms of house price inflation, if we got to that point, maybe at that point the government could reduce the Help to Buy. But at the moment, it's a critical gap for many, many young people in trying to get their first foot on the housing ladder.
Okay. Interest rates expected to come down today. Tracker mortgage holders, of course, will get that automatically. Will other mortgage holders see the benefit of it?
Well, I think other mortgage holders are already seeing the benefit. I did see some movement even in advance of the 25 basis reduction before the summer. I would make the point, and I've made it on your show before, when rates were going up historically, when we went from 0 to 4.5 over an 18-month period, the third lowest transmission of those rates was in the Irish market in the Eurozone. And I think that was done for two specific reasons. One, it shows, notwithstanding the loss of two banks, that we still have significant competition in the mortgage market. But secondly, I think it's fair to say the Irish banking sector are very conscious of the cost of living crisis, and they took a very balanced approach to the interest rate position.
The savers would say they didn't get the bump on the other side either. And you've got competition coming into the market now. I see there's an online company offering 3.6% on savings now. So maybe that's putting a little bit of pressure on that side of things.
So I saw the figures from Eurostat the other day, and Central Bank produced their figures yesterday, which shows we're not a million miles on average savings rates from the Eurozone average. And we're pretty bang on, or close to bang on, where the average is across the Eurozone. That wasn't at the start of this crisis, in terms of the cost of living crisis. So I think, you know, lenders are aware of the issues. And of course, the other point I say is, about 40% of people didn't see any increase in the rates because they had fixed. Now, they will go eventually to a new rate, and that will increase. But the number one priority was to get through this cost of living crisis. And I think, given the fact that the mandate of the central bank, the European Central Bank, is around price stability and reducing inflation.
Okay, but what you haven't said is that people who are on anything other than a tracker rate are going to see the benefit of this rate reduction.
I can't say it. It's a commercial decision for lenders. They make those decisions in the round based on their own cost of funds and based on where they see the market. This is not a decision for an industry group. I'm here to explain what happened when that spike in interest rates happened, that the Irish lending community was the third lowest transmission of interest rates for new mortgages.
Jack Chambers has said, since he came into office as Minister for Finance, he has no interest in even considering the banker's pay cap, not on his agenda. Have you spoken to him about it?
Well, I haven't spoken to him specifically about that issue, but I think it's fair to say that this is a legacy issue. We have, over 40 banks in Ireland, yet two banks have this imposition of a pay cap, and then the other bank, which is outside of the pay cap, also has impositions on bonuses. We operate in a European system through the European Banking Authority, which has set rules on banker remuneration and pay and bonuses. So clawbacks, for instance, are an essential part of the EBA rules. We want the same rules for every other bank that operates in Ireland. And I think, you know, this is an issue that goes back to the crash. We need to realise 60% of the people who are working in Irish banks today weren't there 15 years ago. Irish banks are very well managed today. They take a very prudential, risk-based approach, but also a business approach, recognising that they're the key capital intermediaries in the Irish economy. So if you have these kind of artificial pay caps for two banks, it creates an unlevel playing field.
But people are still paying for the mistakes of the bank. You know, it's not so much a legacy issue for many people who pay tax in this country.
So the good news is that 95% of the totality of money,
it's not all of it,
put into AIB, Bank of Ireland, PTSB, has been repaid. Progress has been made in the selling down of public shareholding position in the other two banks that remain, and we hope to see progress there. But we need to get to a level playing field and to move away from these legacy issues which cast a shadow on the past.
It's not top of your agenda if you haven't gone to Jack Chambers since
he knows my view.
How long is he in office? Since June,
sorry,
I think, of this year.
Sorry, he knows the view of the industry on this issue. The Department of Finance know the view of the industry on this issue. It's a matter for the government. We respect all of the issues that are on their desk right now. But it's an issue that we're working on.
All right, we leave it there. Brian Hayes,
thanks
you
Claire.
For coming in. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.